Yeah, and if that song doesn't song bomb you, then I don't know which one would. Red, red wine. Ooh, one of my favorites for sure. It song bombed me. I'll be singing that all night. Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM. Have you seen the Roswell alien body yet, or any of the slides at all? Well, if not, you can go to coasttocoastam.com. We do have one of those images there, and it is of the Roswell alien body. I know that Richard Dolan got to send that in to us, and I'm looking at it right now. I don't know. I'm waiting to hear. I really, really enjoy Richard. He talked to George the other night, talking about his thoughts on this. I'm waiting to hear what his conclusions might be. So I don't know. Looking at it, right? What? I don't check it out yourself. It's. I don't even know what words to say. I am looking forward to more information for sure, because it doesn't seem to, nothing has come across yet to really substantiate everything yet, at least to me, that I've heard. So maybe I've missed some things, but you don't have to miss anything anymore. Just go to coasttocoastam.com and you can find out and keep up to date, as everybody else does too. Near-death experiences is the topic tonight with Dr. Jeffrey Long here on Coast to Coast AM. He's the founder of the Near-Death Experience Research Foundation. That's NDERF.org. And he is known for the largest scientific study of near-death experiences ever presented. So happy Mother's Day to you out there, and stick around for more of Dr. Jeffrey Long on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you for joining me tonight on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis talking with Dr. Jeffrey Long. Again, happy Mother's Day. Don't forget Mom today. She will remember if you do. Dr. Jeffrey Long, hey, if it's okay to say Jeffrey, is that okay? Jeffrey?
That's perfect.
Okay, perfect. When people have a near-death experience, they and you talk with them, has anybody ever brought back any special messages or information a little different?
Oh, absolutely. And that's been my more recent area of investigation, those, if you will, the special messages. And Connie, we talked a little bit earlier about love, and that's one of the real important ones, as the overwhelming importance of love, not only in the afterlife, but also for our earthly life. But there's other messages that we get. Near-death experiencers often bring back information, valuable information about meaning and purpose of our earthly life, that mystical unity, connection of everyone and everything. Certainly awareness that there is an afterlife and the reality of an afterlife, right, for all of us. So there's a lot of those deeper messages which have been heretofore relatively unstudied. Some of the most fascinating aspects of near-death experience.
And what are those purposes? What are people getting?
Well, it's interesting. The meaning and purposes of life that near-death experiencers become aware of, as a physician, I thought it might be complex or arcane knowledge, but it seems to be relatively straightforward. For example, very often people having a near-death experience, when they're near the end of their near-death experience, they have to make a decision about returning to their earthly life or not. There's often other loving, compassionate spiritual beings with them in a dialogue about whether they should return. And very consistently, the two most important things that seem to encourage people to return to their earthly life and literally leave that heavenly realm is love. Lessons about love, loving interactions with other people, especially familial, family relationships, seems to be very, very important in living our earthly life, certainly relevant on Mother's Day. But then the second thing that seems to be very important is basically the general topic of knowledge, not specific knowledge, but having experiences in our earthly life, learning, understanding from what we encounter in our earthly life, seemingly very similar, simple, and yet not at all, seemingly very important part of a core of why we're here and what we're doing here in our earthly life. Certainly something achievable by all of us.
So they get to a point of, okay, at the very end of this, they have a conversation with other beings, you said dialogue, where they actually discuss staying or going, and then the reasons why. As it's like, can you give an example from somebody specific?
Oh, it would go a lot like this. They'd be near the end of their experience. They're in an unearthly, beautiful realm. They really feel that this unearthly realm is their home. They feel that that's really where they belong. the significant majority of people having a near-death experience at this point in time while they're dialoguing with spiritual beings do not want to return to their earthly life and all that's familiar. They want to stay in that air, that place where there's no anxiety, no discomfort, peace, love, bliss, times
of thousands. There's no debt, there's no stress, there's no feed the dog. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
all that.
Right? So, okay.
So you can understand the majority, significant majority of people that have a near-death experience don't want to leave that realm. They don't want to go back to that misery, to that earthly life. And let's not forget, they got there because they had a close brush with death, and mm-hmm. that would be a fairly traumatic event going on, too, in their earthly life. And yet, during that dialogue, they come to discover, well, what is important? Why should I go back? I mean, there's often questions, answers, and consideration. And ultimately, it's the seemingly the simple things are what leads them to have that decision to come back. Loving relationships, learning about love, having that unique opportunity to learn that seems to be unique to our earthly life. It seems to be very, very important. Learning, understanding, growing, and just literally experiencing Earth. Because don't forget, in the unearthly realms, it's non-physical. It's non-material. Often they just say that time literally doesn't exist the way that we know time on Earth. Or earthly realm, while it may be an incredibly tiny slice of our overall eternal existence, offers some unique opportunities to learn for all of us to grow. And that's seems to be ultimately the reason why people come back to Earth. There's no commands to go build an ark, for example, for nearly all of us. It just seems to be to live, to laugh, to love, and to understand what we have in our earthly life. And that's seemingly so simple, and yet so many people seem to make it so complex.
Do they seem to get an idea of if they would stay, what would be in front of them?
Oh, that's a great question. Very often they do. When they're at that literal life and death decision at the end of the near-death experience about whether to return to their earthly life or not, sometimes they'll be shown future earthly events and what will happen if they choose not to return to their earthly life. In other words, if they permanently, irreversibly die and stay in that heavenly realm, they'll be shown a glimpse of what will happen days to weeks, even years into the future. And we've had a number of people amazingly describe a view of their own funeral. And even as a seasoned researcher, I get chills when I see some of these accounts. Here they describe their own funeral, and like little 1 and 2 year old children at the funeral that are sort of smiling and giggling because, Connie, they don't know what a funeral is. They don't know that somebody died, these very young children. I mean, they're describing gripping reality of what really happens in funerals, in their own funeral. They may see what happens to their children, to their family members, if they don't return and if they're not there for them. And often they find that their life is adverse. It's not nearly as positive as it would have been if they return to their earthly life and are able to be there for them, to help them, guide them into some positive changes. That's really quite dramatic when near-death experiences describe that. But that often that future vision of adverse outcome for their friends, family, children, loved ones is a very powerful incentive for people to literally leave heaven and return to their earthly life.
It's Dr. Jeffrey Long on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis, and we're talking about near-death experiences and his research in it. So you're basically saying, okay, this dialogue is, here is what can happen if you stay here with, if you don't go back, this is what will happen with your family members or this or this. If you do go back, this can happen. So, wow, that's like the fork in the road, and you're being told what can happen from what choice you make. I mean, we'd all love to have that, wouldn't we?
Oh, yeah, and it's amazing, that dialogue. And in fact, they may be shown what happens if they do go back, and what's interesting is they may be shown the children they'll have, whether they're boys or girls, and how many of them, and invariably when they encounter that information, it comes to pass. And exactly as they were shown, which is amazing, because sometimes they're, children or adolescents by the time they're shown this kind of information. But they may realize if they return, they get sort of a glimpse. I mean, certainly not necessarily in detail, but at least some glimpse that their earthly life, and often the glimpse isn't beatific. They may see that they're going to have struggles, difficulties in their life, often recovering from what nearly killed them. There may be some lingering disabilities or disfigurement, and yet you know, even with that kind of, if you will, very upfront disclosure about what your earthly life is like, people realize the meaning and purpose of our earthly life, it's like a gift. It's that important. And so in spite of that awareness of how difficult their life may be, the challenges, and there's opportunities there. And so ultimately, every single person who's had a near-death experience did ultimately, one way or another, make that decision or was returned involuntarily to their earthly life and ultimately share their story.
Well, it's interesting to hear that, okay, if you go back, here's what's going to occur, and this is where you would be needed, and this is what you can do. So it tells that it's laid out. However, it's laid out another way. If you do this, this will happen. So it does give you a sense of these things are laid out. However, your free will, once again, can make a decision in your life and other people's lives. And then if you, at that point, the decision of that person and how life moves forward, and then the decisions of other people's along the way and how it moves forward, it just gets, even though it's simple, it's still complex, and it's just amazing how, wow, these just simple little tiny decisions. Well, yeah. I don't know. I guess that's kind of a big decision, you know, staying
or going. Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, that tapestry of all of us making decisions and how we all interact with each other is absolutely fascinating. You know, you really get the sense that the overwhelming, you know, knowledge and awareness that occurs on the other side. I mean, it's, you know, their consciousness is overwhelmingly accelerated. They may have universal knowledge, and yet what they can't predict is necessarily is going to ultimately be what happens if we return to our earthly life, because it's going to be the product of decisions we make, other people make, and I guess that was what makes our earthly life so fascinating, one of the many things.
When they have the dialogue with the other beings, and that, is that, again, where they're like energy-like or angelic-like or family-like?
It can be anything. It can be family. It's more often angelic-like beings. It may not be classic angelic beings with wings, although wings have been described, but there tend to be beings, often of light beings, who tend to feel overwhelming sense of compassion, connection, overwhelming sense of concern for them. And yet often these spiritual beings want them to make that decision. They are aware that they so want them to return to their earthly life. It seems to be so important. And yet, you know, with all the love and compassion and the beings around them, it's ultimately going to be the person having the near-death experience that makes that decision about returning to their earthly life in so many cases.
At least the ones you've talked to.
At least the one we do. Now, certainly
right.
Other people are sent back
right.
Involuntarily or there's no... Right. Real dialogue that just as a near-death experience ends, boom, they come back to life. So there's really a whole spectrum as to how near-death experiences can end.
Wow. Now, this whole time that they're going through this, to them, you touched on it. Does it seem like forever to them, and then it's only seconds here on the planet?
Yeah, that's a good question. The time on in the afterlife, in the unearthly realms, almost uniformly, near-death experiencers say it doesn't exist. Time, like we know in our earthly life, just simply is non-existent in that afterlife. It's as if everything happens at once. Or, you know, while things are described seemingly in a sequential order that to us in our earthly lives implies time, near-death experiencers say, no, that's not true at all. There really isn't time. And in fact, they may be, say, clinically dead after a cardiac arrest, a heart attack, for just a few minutes, and yet these experiences may seem to go on for hours. I mean, they can be a very what would be equivalent in earthly time, if you will, in terms of the sequence of events. So it can be amazing where people are out unconscious for a short period of time and yet describe a tremendously detailed, seemingly prolonged experience where if it occurred in earthly time would literally be hours, even days.
Yeah, you always hear about time is just man-made. It's a measurement for us, where a lot of psychics and people that are very intuitive or they see things, they always say, I don't know the time. I just know what I saw, right? So that makes a lot of sense.
You know, that's a very interesting analogy, and you're absolutely correct. It seems that in our earthly three-dimensional realm, time is very, very important. Time is based on things that occur over a unit measurement of time, and yet in these unearthly, if you will, higher dimensions, time doesn't exist. The realm of where or the afterlife, time as we know it just simply is non-existent. Very interesting, and certainly helps drive home the point that when people have a near-death experience, it's really nothing that they could have conceived of or expected. I mean, good gosh, who would, when you have a dream, you don't come away saying, wow, that dream had no time in it. You know,
right.
God, in fact, sometimes it can drag on forever, but
that's right.
That too. But it's just one more example about how what occurs in a near-death experience is so markedly unexpected and unknown and actually inconceivable from any of their prior life experiences. And all that kind of information, at least in my way of thinking, certainly tends to validate these things as real visits to an unearthly realm.
You're absolutely right. Well, you know, it's funny. My dad passed away 5 years ago, and before that, he would always say, you know, besides love being the only thing, he believed that as well. But all we are given is time, and it is true. We have time here. It's all time, right? Even time you were born is written down and it's recorded the time you pass. You know, everything is time in between, isn't it? You got to wake up and be at work at a certain time, come home a certain time, eat a certain time. It just goes on and on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we seem to be so much, if you will, under the thumb of time in our earthly life. We have the schedules, the duties, deadlines, all that. Sometimes that kind of makes us crazy here on earth.
Yes.
You know, having all that. And yet, gosh, think about that. Think about how this is such a tiny slice of our eternal life,
yeah.
And the overwhelming time of our eternal existence is going to be spent where there is no time. I mean, imagine that. You've got all the time to get things done, think, learn, live, love, understand, in a realm where we're not under the gun of time, where we can literally, if you will, have, in the absence of time, I think that would just help us be more our own spiritual beings in a way that we simply couldn't know or understand on Earth.
Well, who do you know what happens afterwards? Do you know, do you believe, and what happens before? Have you learned anything like that? Do you believe in reincarnation? Are you getting proof of that? Are you seeing that once they may cross over, that after that they have a chance to pop back in to another body, maybe not just on this planet, but even somewhere else?
Sure. Connie, great question, and we're going to get into true confession time. And I freely admit, Connie, you know, when I started researching near-death experiences, I absolutely did not believe in reincarnation. I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I didn't think it was possible. And yet, as I've studied near-death experiences, I've come away with a concept that one really should not deny the possibility of something happening in an infinite universe. I mean, does that make sense? And if you really accept that we have an infinite universe, it's an infinite universe of possibilities as well.
Right, absolutely.
Absolutely. And as my research progressed, I found many, many near-death experiences that described past life remembrances. Remember, we talked briefly about near-death experiences can have a life review where they see part or even all of their prior life. Well, many near-death experiencers describe a remembrance of living prior lives. And again, these are grippingly real. I mean, these aren't people who remember themselves as Cleopatra or some historical figure. When they remember prior lives, they're very mundane existences. Again, strikingly realistic for what the life would have been at that time. I recall one person who had remembered a prior life where they had reincarnated in previously, where they were in a medieval city. And you may have this fantastic view of medieval cities as beautiful towering palaces and gleaming banners. Well, that's not how it really was 1,000, 1,500
years ago. They were like fighting all the time, right? They had swords.
Oh, yeah. Well, what they described in their near-death experiences is it was dirt everywhere. The streets were very muddy. They had buildings right up to the wall because, don't forget, these were walled-in cities. And you had to use whatever space you had within the wall, and there was disease and it was a very unbeautiful and yet very realistic description of exactly how life was in so many of these medieval cities of 1,000, 1,500 years ago. So when I read these, it's like, wow, that really has a ring of reality to me in a way that if they had described some beatific or fantastical prior life, I'd have a hard time believing. But they're really talking about how our ancestors really lived all those generations ago.
Well, believing in reincarnation and believing in coming in and then going out and then coming in and going out, you got to wonder where it all started in the first place. It becomes that egg and chicken, which came first. We are talking with Dr. Jeffrey Long about near-death experiences and his research, scientific research, and it's all really, really good, interesting stuff. So stick around. We've got more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Good stuff. I'm dancing. Are you? Hey there, it's Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM. If you're looking for an out-of-this-world gift for Mother's Day today, well, you could always name a Martian crater for Mom. Yep, name a Mars crater for Mom this Mother's Day today. If you'd like to know more information, you can always go to coasttocoastam.com, and if you look in the news, that's where you're going to find that link. That's kind of cool. Wow, I hope Mom doesn't hear that. I'm not prepared. She would be wanting that for sure. I don't blame her. Well, Dr. Jeffrey Long is who we are talking with this hour and for the rest of the evening, and we're talking about near-death experiences. We've got more to discuss with him coming up here on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM with Connie Willis, and it's another fascinating show here on Coast to Coast AM. Thank you, George Norrie, for allowing me to be a part of it. It's fun talking with Dr. Jeffrey Long about, and very interesting, about near-death experiences. Jeff, we got to, I got to ask you this. Different people I've discussed this with and what I've read up about and met people personally that had near-death experiences, and they claim that they have come back and they believe it's a different soul. And not only do they believe they're a different soul, but they have had, and their spouses and family members will also say, they never liked mustard. Now they love mustard. They never were able to write music before. Now they're writing, you know, composing music. What do you say about that?
Well, Connie, you're absolutely right. Some people come back changed and changed in so many ways, and they can literally seem or apparently be somebody different. Very rarely, but we've had in near-death experiences, I've seen some reported where they seem to literally have a different soul return to their earthly body. I want to emphasize that's extremely rare. But no question about that, there's a famous near-death experiencer, I believe a physician, came back and was able to compose music, piano music, which he was absolutely not able to do before. It's certainly common for people to experience major life changes after having a near-death experience, and we call them after effects, and they're powerful, lasting, life-enhancing, and generally follow a consistent pattern. And certainly some of the most fascinating are those really dramatic changes where people seem to be literally very different people.
You know what? I wonder if the instance you're talking about might have been the same that I had read about and heard about. Let me ask you this. I believe the man not only came back and felt he was someone different, and he was composing music and all just very interesting things, but also, which this was not a cool thing, because, okay, he passed but came back. So his spouse was extremely happy. However, he was a different person. It wasn't the same person she had married, and they eventually actually divorced.
You know, that can happen, Connie. Sometimes when people come back and they're so completely changed, that actually puts a stress on a marriage. And even if the relationship was very loving, if you have somebody who's very different, and sometimes even when the changes in the person are seemingly positive, they're more loving, more compassionate, less fearful. Even sometimes positive changes in life can result in a stress. So if that happens, and especially if there's huge changes so that they don't even seem to be the same person, that can lead to relationship conflict and even divorce. Certainly, let's not forget these people nearly died, so sometimes there can be some other psychological after effects of that traumatic experience that nearly killed them, or even if they coded, if their heart stopped, there can be some neurologic problems. But, you know, no question about that. After near-death experiences, after a close brush with death, unfortunately, occasionally there can be some relationship breakups. Now, on the other hand, many near-death experiencers come back, again, more loving, compassionate. They're more interested in having a loving relationship with their significant other, and that can result in actually stronger relationships and stronger marriages. So it can go either way.
Yeah, that's what I would think, but how? Yeah, I would think that too. I mean, my gosh, if somebody like that passed away and came back, I'd be just as happy too, and want to get closer and closer. However, if they were another soul, and it's like, who is this? You know, that I can understand that happening too. And that's what I remember in that specific incident. I'm getting a lot of people writing in and asking me about suicide and how does that differ? Is there any difference?
Sure. Unfortunately, a few near-death experiences are as a result of suicide. Now, when someone has a near-death experience as a result of suicide, they have typical near-death experiences. The content of the near-death experience tends to be no different from other near-death experiences that occurred as a result of other life-threatening events. Now, the interesting thing about suicide, and this has been very well studied, that have near-death experiences, is as follows. Now, people that attempt suicide and survive have a high predisposition to attempt suicide again and again and again, and of course have a life-threatening event every time. And yet, if they attempted suicide and had a near-death experience, these people that had those near-death experiences as a result of suicide attempt are much, much less likely to attempt suicide again. The interesting thing is if during their near-death experience they understand that their earthly life, as difficult or even as miserable as it might have been, the circumstances that led to their suicide attempt, in spite of all of that, they come to understand that suicide is not the answer. That suicide is not the right thing to do. It's not right to end our earthly life. And that as difficult as earthly life existence may be, there's still enough meaning and purpose and things that we need to do and learn in our earthly life that suicide is not the answer. And we see that over and over in the suicide near-death experiences that I've researched.
That there's like a reason we're here. There's some sort of something beforehand that got us here. When you're saying that when we have dialogue to decide to come back or not, and what's going to happen if you do or what's going to happen if not, it's almost like maybe beforehand to get us here, originally we may have had dialogue as well, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. It was almost like a covenant. Here's what we need to learn during our earthly life. Here's what's important. It's as if we're eternal spiritual beings that are here with the gift of our earthly life because we have certain things we need to know and learn and understand so that we can be even more so in our eternal life after our earthly life. And certainly people that have near-death experiences as a result of suicide, they come away understanding that. And it seems paradoxical. They're less fearful of death, and yet they're more understanding that their life is purposeful, that they really need to live out their earthly life. And that's going to be very, very life-enhancing for these people.
So no different. I know that there's a lot of religious beliefs of suicide, and you're saying that, if they have them, it's going to be the same as anybody else.
Yeah, in general, the content of near-death experiences doesn't seem to be significantly different from other near-death experiences under other circumstances. Yes, a very small percentage can be frightening, but the overwhelming majority aren't. And so as a result of that, I know there's a lot of religious beliefs about suicide, but, you know, whenever I do my near-death experience research, all my pre-existing beliefs have to come off and my science lab coat has to go on, and I report the facts as I understand them and as they're shared with me by people that have near-death experiences.
Well, we're talking with Dr. Jeffrey Long about near-death experiences. I'm Connie Willis, and you're listening to Coast to Coast AM. When you talk about, Jeffrey, the frightening experiences people have, can you describe in depth, can you give us a visual of what they've described to you?
Well, certainly. There's different a spectrum of frightening near-death experiences. The less than 1% of near-death experiences are truly hellish, and these are really objectively frightening. I mean, these are the kind of things that'll even make my hair stand up on end after studying over 4,000 near-death experiences. But they can end up in truly a graphic hellish realm. There can be frightening beings, extremely frightening beings that are threatening. They can look demonic, they can look like basically anything, but often, you know, whatever seems to have frightened them the most. There can be fire, foul smells, screams of anguish of other people there. They can either be in that realm themselves, in the hellish realm, or they can be observing the hellish realm from the distance, and that's actually more common. But they have that sense of loss, that sense of despair. And yet, interestingly, many people that are even in that hellish realm will, if you will, cry out or ask to be saved from that, and very often they're pulled out from that realm and the experience goes on and is much more positive and typically blissful like other near-death experiences.
Wow. Is there always a decision made at the end? Is there always a, you have a choice, or and sometimes they're just pushed back?
Yeah, actually, most of the time at the end of a near-death experience, they don't have that sit-down dialogue. The experience just simply ends, and just bam, they're back in their body. There may be an awareness that the experience is ending, or the experience may just simply end without them having that awareness. And then typically, bang, they're right back in their body. They may have to recover consciousness, or they may suddenly have all that pain and misery of that accident or illness that caused that close brush with death.
Have you ever, are you familiar with remote viewing and the psychic spies and the Project Stargate?
Yeah, I sure am. I've talked extensively with one of the government's remote viewers in the past.
Excellent. Who did you speak with?
John Alexander.
Okay. I would think he's listening tonight. Hey there, John, how are you? I thought about him when we were putting this together. Hey there, John. Let's see if he emails and says hi back. Well, Lynn Buchanan was also one of them, and I studied under him. He did a lot of remote viewing where at one point they would set up targets and say, and I've mentioned this before on one of my shows here, that they set up targets where they would say, like, 1 minute before someone passed away, and then even like 1 minute after someone passed away, or, you know, 10 hours after somebody passed away, or 2 weeks after someone passed away, 13 years after someone passed away. And he said through all their testing, I hope I say this right from what I learned from him, but through all the targets that he went through and he viewed, and he's an incredible viewer, he said that there were times that he viewed death as hell, as we see hell, just like you had said. He said there are other times that he viewed what people saw in death as heaven and just wonderful and incredible. And he also said that he viewed where there was like nothing, absolutely nothing. And he said some of those people, they continued to move forward in time and they started seeing something again around 12 or 13, which, you know, a lot of tribes would always celebrate those times as the beginning of, becoming a man or a woman or different things like that. So very interesting. So when you say that sometimes these people don't have a near-death experience, I wonder if they're going through something like that too, maybe.
Yeah, that's a real good question. And that's what's so interesting about afterlife research is there's so many different ways to investigate it and research it. And, you know, they all seem to point at least qualitatively on the conclusion that indeed there is an afterlife, that our consciousness doesn't end and cease to exist when we physically die, that it goes on and there's something else. Really be interesting, you know, Connie, to get all of us people, like the investigations you've just described, get us all in one room and just talk about it.
Oh, that would be really cool. I'm with you. I'm totally ahead of you here on that. I wanted to ask you about one of my dear friends. He does documentaries, and he did the Afterlife Investigations, which is an incredible documentary. It's basically the Skoll Experiment, and it's a 5-year investigation into life after death. And it's Tim Coleman. He directed, produced, and wrote that. And I believe there's like a second one coming out. And how wonderful for you to even get with him on this, because you're near death. And he's, you know, what happens afterwards. And, you know, hey, there's a lot of similarities there. That'd be a great conversation with you guys to what you guys can learn.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. As with all other scientific investigations, it really helps to corroborate observations that you make and findings of research with findings of other investigators using different methodologies. So just a core scientific principle that it makes sense to sit down, compare notes, and see what we got, you know, see where we find similarities, see where we find discrepancies, and that would be fun. Again, you sit down, room, talk, and share. That'd make a great coast-to-coast show, too.
Oh, my goodness. It'd be fantastic. I mean,
yeah, no kidding. So certainly, you know, really interesting to, and certainly while I have studied near-death experiences extensively, I also have a website devoted to after-death communication and a variety of other aspects of afterlife. So, you know, this is all things that are very forefront in my investigations and my thinking about afterlife. So to, for all of us to compare notes, I think would be amazing. And I think, Connie, in bringing that up, you bring up another excellent point. You know, it's the evidence for the afterlife is not just in near-death experiences, it's in so many other of these investigations and pursuits. And I find it remarkable that so many researchers using so many ways of looking at the issue all coming down with the same conclusion, hey, we're more than just our physical earthly bodies. There's an afterlife, and there's a wonderful afterlife, and it seems to be involving all of us. And that's really, really exciting.
Yeah, I have no doubt whatsoever that there is, and it's just, you know, just my own intuition saying that. It's interesting that you're also studying the afterlife as well. I mean, after, you know, the crossing occurs, if that's the correct word to use. But one of the things that the skull experiment had shown in the documentary, I look forward to you seeing that and then you getting back with me on that. But one of the things that they showed in that film was the people on the other side had physical things drop out of the air, just out of midair, things would drop. And what I remember visually was it looked like plants or parts of flowers or plants or something like that. And I remember seeing that and thinking, wow, that's interesting. You know, you think at first, is that a trick? I mean, how did they, this was extensive research and all that was, you know, no tricks, this, that, and that. It was really carefully watched. But when you see it, you don't believe it. However, again, I had said my dad had passed away 5 years ago. The day he passed away, when we were back home later that day, I remember my mom laying in the bed and talking to me, and I was at the end of the bed. And at that point, you're still like, "What? You know, what happened? What occurred?" You know, you're still in that shock. But we're in the bedroom, and I kid you not, this little peppermint, little wrapped up single peppermint, was the little red and white ones we all have, was thrown at me. And it hit me on my on my chest shoulder area, and I looked at my mom. I said, "What'd you do that for?" I was like, "Why'd you just throw a piece of candy at me?" And she said, "I didn't do that." And you know what? She was under the cover. She was sitting up, but her hands were under the cover. And I said, "Mom, you had to have done that. Why would you do that? I'm right here." And she said, "I didn't do that." And I kid you not. I mean, that was my dad's favorite little snack. He always had little mints, and I believe my dad was like, "Hey, it's me, I'm here." I think that was a little message from him. And seeing the experiments, and when they had physical pieces of something you could touch and fall and hit the ground, just come out of nowhere, that's what I saw with my dad and his little peppermint candy. Of course, after that, I would kid around and say, "Hey, Dad, you know, throw a piece of gold, a meteorite, something, you know, come on. We're still here on the planet Earth."
That's great. Hey, Connie, thanks for sharing that. Often when people encounter sort of physical objects thrown like that, that's part of my after-death communication research, and I agree with you. I think that was absolutely a message from your father. Yeah. Doing it in a way that you would understand that it's a message, because that was his, you know, a favorite candy or something that he's done in the past. It would have special meaning or significance for you. I've actually studied about 2,000 after-death communications, and what you describe, Connie, there is certainly in the spectrum of how the deceased seem to communicate with us that are living.
Yeah, it is amazing, because when you do know that, and then you start, like, you know, not really kidding around, "Hey, Dad, throw some gold here, come on, you know what's really going on." You got to wonder about that. It's like, okay, you sent me something that I can know that it's you. Now that I know that it's you, do send something significant, or find this watch that I lost, or anything like that. And you know, I guess where they are, they're just kind of laughing at, "Hey, you know what, we'll see you soon. Don't worry about the money. Don't worry about this. Relax, enjoy life." You kind of get those responses. What do you think about that?
Oh, I totally agree. I think the communication may be fairly subtle like that. It may be a subtle message, you know, potentially even overlooked. I mean, you could have just sort of blown it off and forgotten about that. Yeah. And yet when you think about it and realize it was impossible for it to occur other than the circumstance of being a message from your father, that's where you start to realize you've had an after-death communication. And after-death communications aren't rare. There's probably at least 30% of the population that very firmly believes they've had a communication from their deceased loved ones, analogous to what you described, Connie. And that's what's sort of a whole, it's a different from near-death experiences and yet in the same spectrum, and that at all points that we have a life after death. And certainly, you know, here we are on Mother's Day, for those of us that have had mothers that have passed away, you know, yet further evidence for that profound message of hope that, you know, all of our deceased loved ones are aware of us, can interact with us on relatively rare occasions, and certainly, you know, inspiring.
It's good stuff. There's no question about that. It's Dr. Jeffrey Long that we're talking with, and he's had so much research into near-death experiences, also out-of-body experiences, and afterlife stuff. So we'll talk to about him about that a little bit more. Yeah, we'll talk to him more about the afterlife, too. And we may take some phone calls next hour. I know you guys are dying to ask him something, so why not? What the heck? Mothers, call in. Ask some questions. Happy Mother's Day. We'll be back more. Oops, I hit the microphone. Did you hear that? Or somebody else did. Woohoo! We'll be back with more of Dr. Jeffrey Long here. I'm Connie Willis. It's Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for listening.